I have some regrets. A few years ago, I set out to build my dream net zero energy home. I've been living here for a little over 2 years now, and so far, I've been more than satisfied. I have enough solar and battery storage to balance out all of my annual energy use, a highly efficient geothermal heating and cooling system that supplies me with hot water for almost no money. And this is the most comfortable and energy efficient home that I've ever lived in. Overall, I absolutely love this house, but even the best laid plans have issues, and mine were no different. If you want to avoid expensive mistakes, learn from what actually works in a net zero home, or just see what tech lived up to the hype, there might be some lessons that you can learn from the choices I made, and the ones I didn't make. I'm Matt Farrell. Welcome to Undecided. This video is brought to you by Surfshark. So what specifically would I do differently? Well, we're talking about hot water storage, rainwater collection, ventilation upgrades, smart electric panels, and future-proofing decisions that I got wrong. I've put chapter markers into the description to help you jump around. But let's start with hot water. My current setup uses a water furnace geothermal system with a desuper heater that captures waste heat. That preheated water, usually around 110 to 130 degrees Fahrenheit, or 43 to 54 degrees Celsius, feeds into a Rheem heat pump water heater that finishes the job. It works, but it takes up a lot of space. But there's a lot more to it than that. I'm only heating water when we actually use it. There's no way to charge up my hot water during the day when my solar panels are pumping out excess power. Basically, I can't time shift my energy use to when it's cheapest or most practical. It's tied to, well, keeping the hot water hot. Enter SunAmp's Thermino Heat Battery. Now, this thing uses phase change materials, basically salt compounds that store four times more heat energy than water in the same volume. When you need hot water, cold water flows through and the phase change material releases its stored heat instantly. Under the genius part, you can charge it whenever you want, during the day when your solar is cranking, at night when the electricity rates are cheap. The energy storage can be decoupled from when you actually use the hot water. A study from Edinburgh Napier University found that homes using SunAmp as a preheat system saw 36% of their hot water heated entirely by stored solar power. Their backup heating dropped from over 4 kilowatt hours per day down to less than half a kilowatt hour. In my case, this would work even better because I already have preheated water for my desuper heater. The SunAmp would be heating 110 degree Fahrenheit water up to 136 degrees Fahrenheit, not cold 50 degree Fahrenheit city water. Plus, the space savings are huge. A SunAmp Thermino 300 is about 41 inches tall by 14 inches wide and 22 inches deep. And my current Rheem tank is about 62 inches tall and 24 inches around. That's roughly one third less floor space. So why didn't I do that? Well, honestly, SunAmp had limited availability in the US when I was in the process of building in 2022 and 2023. I did reach out to them, but we were in a time crunch and making last minute changes would have cost too much money. Now, the real regret isn't the money though. It's that I wish I had known this technology was available and researched it before finalizing my hot water plans. With 20 kilowatts of solar on my roof, having thermal storage that charges during midday surplus would maximize my investment. Right now, my excess production goes to the grid. Another thing that I kind of wish I had installed was a full gutter system to collect all my roof's rainwater. Here's the math. With about 45 inches of rainfall per year in Massachusetts and a 2,000 square foot roof, I could potentially harvest over 55,000 gallons of rainwater annually. Even factoring in an 80% capture efficiency, that's still 44,000 gallons. It would be enough to fill a swimming pool and handle most of my outdoor watering needs. And for anyone that's curious about gray water from showers, it gets trickier in my state of Massachusetts because regulations are more restrictive and involve a lot more bureaucracy. You need local Board of Health approval to get started. On top of this, in many jurisdictions, you can't collect gray water if you're connected to a public sewer. But rainwater? That's generally legal and encouraged for non-potable outdoor use. No permits required for basic rain barrels. And the cost reality for a medium-sized rainwater system with a 1,000 to 2,500 gallon tank might run around $2,500 to $5,500. A more comprehensive system with an underground cistern could hit $8,000 to $30,000. And here's the honest math. A medium system might take 10 years to pay back based purely on water bill savings. So is it really worth it? Well, for me, the real regret is simpler. I wish I'd at least installed plumbing rough-ins during construction. That would be things like separate drain lines for future gray water, a pre-positioned tank location with conduit, and exterior hose bibs fed by a future cistern. Putting those into place would have cost maybe $1,000 to $2,000 during the build. It would make any future retrofit cheaper and much easier. So the lesson, even if you don't install the full system designed for future expansion, this isn't just about harvesting rainwater, but any potential system that you might think you want down the road. There is one thing about my house that probably frustrates me the most. Before I get to that, there's another piece of tech that doesn't frustrate me at all. And that's today's sponsor, Surfshark VPN. In the past few months, I've attended a few conferences like CES, and between hotel and conference Wi-Fi, I leaned heavily on Surfshark VPN to keep my browsing secure and private. Recently, there was a massive Brightspeed data breach that leaked more than 1 million customers' personal data. Things like names, emails, phone numbers, and more. But with Surfshark, you can protect yourself while online. When signing up for new website accounts, you can use Surfshark's alternative ID to mask your name and contact info. That helps you avoid spam and data leaks. They also have an email scam checker that uses AI to spot phishing attacks in your Gmail. It works through their Chrome extension and catches suspicious content and malicious links before you click on anything dangerous. It's pretty cool. And right now they're running a special deal. Go to surfshark.com/undecided or use my code undecided at checkout to get over 4 extra months of Surfshark VPN. Surfshark offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk to try it out for yourself. I've been using Surfshark for years, and I love it. Don't miss out on this great deal. The link's in the description below, and thanks to Surfshark and to all of you for supporting the channel. So back to what frustrates me the most. This one probably frustrates me the most. My current ERV connects to my HVAC return ductwork. It shares ducts with my heating and cooling system. The problem? To get continuous fresh air, I have to run my HVAC air handler fan at low speed constantly. In other words, it's running even when I don't need heating or cooling. If I don't do that, the ERV's fan isn't powerful enough to carry the fresh air to certain areas of the house. Now, granted, that's only about 35 watts to run the air handler fan at low speed, but it adds up and puts extra wear and tear on my HVAC system. A dedicated ERV system like Zender uses completely separate small diameter ducts. We're talking about 3.5-inch flexible tubes that fit into standard walls. Fresh air gets delivered directly to bedrooms. Stale air gets exhausted from bathrooms and kitchens. The ERV runs independently at optimized low speed. Your HVAC system only runs when you need it. Now, in some cases, the energy difference could be substantial. My current setup probably draws 45 to 50 watts continuously to circulate air through the full HVAC ductwork. That's accounting for the ERV fan plus the air handler running at low speed 24/7. A dedicated Zender system might use 20 to 30 watts at low levels for most of the time. That's a savings of maybe $5 a month or $60 a year at Massachusetts electricity rates. It's not huge, but again, less wear and tear on the HVAC system by separating it out. But it's not just about energy use. It's a matter of air quality and, by extension, health. With dedicated ductwork, each bedroom gets its own tuned fresh air supply, even with the doors closed. My current system dilutes fresh air throughout the whole house. So, what's the cost of a Zender system? Well, it's about $12,000 to professionally install it. Maybe $6,000 to $9,000 if you DIY the ductwork. So why didn't I do that? Well, honestly, budget priorities. It just came down to the money. The system I have works, but I do wish I'd gone with a more premium ERV setup. Retrofitting now would cost way more than I'd ever want to spend. And this is a perfect example of design decisions that are cheap during construction, but expensive to retrofit. That $5,000 to $10,000 extra during my build would have given me a negligible energy gain, but better tuned air quality, quieter operation, and less wear and tear on my HVAC system. I have 2 span panels in my house, and I have no regrets there. They're exactly what I needed for my solar and geothermal setup with all the fix-ins. Circuit level energy monitoring, remote control, solar and battery integration, and all of it tied into Home Assistant, I absolutely love it. But doing this costs about $13,000 to $18,000 for both panels professionally installed. For someone with an existing home and working electrical panel who just wants energy monitoring and more sophisticated energy control, that's a tough sell. Enter Noble Carbon. This is a Massachusetts company that's actually based in Pittsfield, making smart circuit breakers that drop directly into your existing panel. It's the same form factor as your current breakers. You can swap them in one at a time. Each one monitors energy usage for that specific circuit in real time and gives you some great smart control. The approach is completely different from what I have. Span requires replacing your entire panel. It's all or nothing. Noble Carbon lets you start with 3 or 4 critical circuits for about $500, allowing you to add more over time as you need. Think about it this way. Your HVAC, water heater, EV charger, and dryer probably account for 70% of your electricity use. Monitor those 4 circuits and you've got most of the picture for a fraction of the cost. If you have 100-amp service and you want to install an EV charger without the need for an expensive 200-amp service upgrade, this type of product is your answer. You can prioritize the circuits so you'll never go past your amp limit. Span is phenomenal if you're building new or already need a panel replacement. But for retrofits, Noble Carbon represents an exciting alternative that grows with you. Different tools for different situations. My house was built by Unity Homes with thick, insulated wall panels. R35 walls with minimal thermal bridging. They offer something similar for roof panels, but my wife and I opted out to save money. It was the same for the basement, which was a slab on grade. That saved me maybe $35,000 to $80,000 combined. Now here's what it cost me. Without a basement or conditioned attic space, all my mechanical equipment, electrical panels, HVAC ductwork, and everything else competes for first floor space. Basically everything inside the thermal envelope. Duct runs had to go through interior walls or soffits. A full basement would have given me a massive, dedicated mechanical room. It would be 8 feet tall with full footprint access, all my equipment centralized, noise isolation from living spaces, and temperature stability from ground buffering. The HVAC distribution would have been more simplified too. The ductwork runs could have gone under the first floor joists, straight shots to every room, fully accessible for future modifications. During my build, that $40,000 to $60,000 in savings was significant. It made the project affordable and allowed us to put money towards other priorities. But after living here for 2 years, I'm seeing how that basement or attic space would make it easier to make some of those tweaks to the house that I'd like to do. If I were building again with my current knowledge, I'd choose either insulated roof panels or a full basement. Having neither means all my infrastructure competes for the space within the conditioned living area. It works, it just makes it more challenging to adapt the house over time. This is what I really wish I'd done differently. I went all in on Enphase microinverters and batteries for my 17.2 kilowatt roof array. They're great, they're rock solid, but they locked me into a 100% grid-tied system with limited expansion options. The real regret? Not choosing a battery system designed for hybrid flexibility from the start. Franklin's whole home battery system, specifically the A-Power S, would have changed everything. The Franklin A-Gate sits between your main panel and utility meter. It would see all the different power flows, like if you have roof solar or ground solar, batteries, the grid, and the house loads. It manages everything intelligently. The A-Power S has built-in hybrid inverters. That means you can connect a ground-mounted solar array directly to the battery, no separate inverter needed. It's DC coupled for maximum efficiency. So here's the key. Franklin's system is AC coupled and works with any inverter, including Enphase. So if I installed a ground-mounted array in my backyard as a second system, both my solar arrays would charge the batteries. My roof array feeds Franklin through AC coupling. The ground array would feed through DC coupling. Both charge the same battery bank. Both can power the house. The difference is what would happen to the excess energy. In this theoretical system where I'd have a ground array and a roof array, my roof array stays grid-tied and participates in the net metering. When it produces more than the house and batteries need, excess flows to the grid, just as normal. That's the system the utility approved. But the ground array, it's DC coupled directly to the A-Power S. It never touches the grid. When the batteries are full and the house load is satisfied, the system simply curtails the ground array. It stops producing. This means I could add 10 kilowatts of ground-mounted panels in my backyard, or 20, or 50. The utility wouldn't care because that isn't grid-connected. That would eliminate so many headaches all at once. No approval process, no engineering studies, no fees, no caps on system size. So both arrays work together to charge batteries and power the house. But only the roof array can export, and only the ground array can expand without permission. The Franklin A-Power S launched in 2024, so it didn't exist when I built my house in 2022. So this isn't really a regret about a decision I made, it's about the timing and technology availability. But here's what I could have controlled. I should have pre-run conduit from my house to the back of my property during construction using a 2-inch PVC pipe buried in the ground. Maybe 100 feet. That would have cost, what, $500, $600 when the trenches were already open for other utilities? The lesson is simple. Even if the technology doesn't exist yet, stub the infrastructure, run the conduit, leave the pathways open, the hardware will catch up, and when it does, you'll be ready. The biggest lesson across all these regrets comes down to kind of one thing. Pathways. The only way to truly future-proof a home is to pull conduit to certain parts of the home. That way, if new technology comes out in 3 to 5 years, you're safe from FOMO. I wish I'd run 2-inch conduit from the mechanical room to key locations around the house, as well as exterior conduit to eaves, front door, driveway, backyard. For my video doorbell, I'm dealing with transformer wiring and Wi-Fi. With a single Cat 6A cable from my network closet, I would have power over Ethernet plus gigabit data. I'd be able to relish in the reliable power, faster video streaming, and easier troubleshooting. PoE now supports up to 100 watts. You can run IP cameras, Wi-Fi access points, smart displays, even LED lighting, all from central switches with UPS backup. The cost for a comprehensive conduit network during construction? Maybe $1,500 to $3,000? Maybe. The retrofit cost for the same could be 2 to 3 times that, plus all the ripping into the finished walls. No thank you. Future-proofing doesn't mean that you have to pick the right technology ahead of time, every time. It's more about creating pathways for technologies that don't exist yet. Conduit is the cheapest insurance policy you'll ever buy. Looking back at my regrets, you can probably start to see a pattern. Some technologies like the SunAmp heat battery or Franklin's split solar system simply didn't exist or weren't available when I built, or I just wasn't aware of them. That's not a really regret, it's just bad timing. But the infrastructure decisions, the conduit I didn't run, the basement or insulated roof I skipped, the network placement I didn't think through, those were all knowable at the time. I just wasn't thinking holistically about how some of the systems would interact. If you're building a net zero home or even just renovating, think about heat flows, think about pathways, think about where equipment will live not just today, but 10 years from now. Your future self will thank you. But what do you think? Do you have similar regrets? Would you do it differently? Jump in the comments and let me know. You can also check out the extended cuts of my videos over on Patreon. And speaking of that, these videos take a team to make, a team of humans. Real research, real interviews, real feedback from experts, no AI slop. If that matters to you, Patreon support helps a ton. And a special thank you to new Supporter Plus member, Kate. The link's in the description if you'd like to join, but honestly, just watching like you are is also awesome, so thank you. And check out my follow-up podcast, Still to be Determined, will keep this conversation going. Keep your mind open, stay curious. I'll see you in the next one.